The book of Zechariah. Now you're not going to get anything wonderful. You're just going to get a motto that I want you to have before you constantly throughout this year. Chapter 14, Zechariah, and in chapter 14. And we'll read from verse 20. In that day shall there be upon the bells of the horses, the harness, the bridles of the horses, holiness unto the Lord. And the pots in the Lord's house shall be like the bowls upon the altar. Yea, every pot in Jerusalem and in Judah shall be holiness unto the Lord of hosts, and all they that sacrifice shall come and take of them and seethe therein. And in that day there shall be no more the Canaanite in the house of the Lord of hosts. The Lord will bless the word, the reading of his word. Our scriptures are from the second part of the book of Zechariah, which begins at chapter 9, beginning of chapter 9, and goes right through to the end of chapter 14. The King and His Kingdom, I think I would make as a title of these chapters. There are two burdens in them. There is the final restoration of Israel from chapter 9 to chapter 11, we would discover that. And then there is the world drama of judgment and of redemption. We would discover that would form the second part from chapter 12 to chapter 14. There are two parts in chapter, three parts, forgive me, in chapter 14. There is the messianic forecast from chapter 12 to 13 and 6. And then there is the messianic method of effecting what constitutes the third part, the messianic trial. The messianic method, chapter 13, 7 to 14, 5. And then the triumph, 14, 6 to 21. The whole burden of this section of Zechariah is related to that day. In that day, you'll get it about 20 times in the second part, from chapters 9 to 14. And this, there are two occasions where it's mentioned in our reading, from verses 20, in verses 20 and 21. And I want to concentrate on four words this afternoon. They came to me while the message, of course, didn't come to me then, but they came to me when our dear brother Ian was speaking yesterday. Felt the urge to follow what he had to say. These words, holiness unto the Lord. Did you notice, you know, this was the first time when I was looking at Zechariah recently, that I really had riveted on my mind the fact that these words were in capital letters. Notice in your Bible. Why isn't John 3 and 16 in capital letters? Surely, they are as important, are they not, as Zechariah chapter 14 and verses 20 and 21. Yet, there's nothing about capital letters about that, or in the truths that our brethren were bringing to us yesterday. Is there not as much merit in them as there is in this? As a matter of fact, I want to underline this. The reason why these words are singled out in capital letters, is that I believe they were the most sacred words in the Jewish economy. These are the words that the Jews believed and declared holiness unto the Lord, though they didn't often rise to the responsibility of it. Nevertheless, they were emblazoned on the mitre, the turban. You remember? Holiness unto the Lord. On the high priest's turban. They were imprinted on a golden plate tied with ribbon to that mitre, holiness unto the Lord. These words were so sacred that I'm told they would never repeat them because they were on the mitre. And they would not so much as lift up their eyes to look at these words, holiness unto the Lord. The pious Jew wouldn't do that. Such was the reverence and respect they had to these four words. That being so, you can understand why the congregation were shocked at the message conveyed by this, I think, probably a young prophet. Great to see young prophets. Great to hear them this morning, wasn't it? In worship. I'm not one of these old fellows, and I'm an old fellow now, but I'm not one of these old fellows that think that all God's men are dead. You know, there are people like that. Oh, there are no more Albert Leckis, you know. There are no more Robert McPhee. There are no more Bill Craigs. I want to tell you there's some really great young fellows coming up. I know that. I hear them. And I'm thrilled just to think about that. So this young prophet had the audacity to speak about the sacred motive being on the bridles, on the harness of the horses, and as well, so common place as to be in the pots in the temple and in common usage. He declared that this would take place in that coming day. What did he mean by the pots of the Lord's house being like the bowls on the altar? Well, if you've gone into the temple, you would have seen that there were special vessels. I know that there were some extra special, but these were special vessels that are referred to as the bowls on the altar, because it was from them that were taken the water of purification and the holy oil to anoint the kings and the priests. These were vessels of the altar, sacred vessels. But here is this young prophet, and he's saying that the pots, what were they? Well, they were for cleaning the place. They weren't sacred. They were in a place where you would never see them. So different from these other vessels that related to the altar. They were out of sight. And yet, he's telling the people that are nurtured in the ritual and ceremony of that day that there would come a day when the pots of the Lord's house would be treated with as much reverence and awe as the bowls upon the altar, and as sacred as these words, holiness unto the Lord, that were emblazoned upon the mitre of the high priest. But he was more daring than that even. He said every pot in Jerusalem, not just those that were used for cleaning the temple, but every pot in Jerusalem and Judah would be holiness unto the Lord. What did he mean by this? Dare he suggest a lowering of standards? My beloved, we know, just as he knew, that there were far too many lowering divine standards then as now. Too often, the Lord's standards are low. No, he never had any thought of that at all in his mind. I'll tell you what I believe about this. You cannot have true morality without true religion. And you cannot have true religion without true worship. And you cannot have true worship without true reverence. We can't overstate that. And listen, for here is the secret of it all. You can't have true reverence without a true knowledge of God. And the great disaster with Israel was they didn't know their God. And Paul had to charge the Corinthians, you have not the knowledge of God. You know, I spoke about the old fellows of a past generation yesterday. I speak about them today. If there was anything, or they didn't have a great knowledge of the Scriptures, many of them, as I said, but they had a great knowledge of God. Great knowledge of God. If you're rearing a dozen children, and the money that they got per week then, but I got it myself, was £2. Not 14 pence, but 14 shillings, because I'm before the change in currency. 2.14. I'll tell you, you had to know you've got. And they did. They had the knowledge of God. Notice what the prophet did not say. This is important, because he did not say that the bowls of the altar should become like the pots in the house. No, he reversed that completely. It was the pots of the house that would become like the bowls of the altar. Treated with the same reverence and respect inside the temple. Oh, there was a great leveling announced. He was going to speak of this great leveling. But he wasn't bringing God's standards down. That's what we've got to be aware of today. We daren't bring God's standards down. And he didn't. No. He was bringing man's standards up to God. That's what we need. That's what we need today. Bringing men's standards up to the divine standard. You see, you must remember in this context again that everything the priest wore, even to that, on his mitre, and everything that he did as he functioned in the house of God represented the people. He was God's representative of the people. Thus it was of a representative character. And it was as this that he went into the presence of God with holiness unto the Lord. He wasn't so much emphasizing his holiness as representing the people in the presence of the Lord. That's why he had holiness unto the Lord on his mind. He's representing the whole nation of Israel who were standing outside. so that when he would come out, as you remember, they waited for Zacharias coming out, but he didn't come. Remember in Luke chapter 1, the people stood outside waiting for the word from the Lord and the blessing of the Lord. You ever seen the contrast between Luke's gospel at the beginning and at the end? You know, to assess properly the wonder of the priesthood of Christ, you have to see the failure of the priesthood of Israel. And so there they were, waiting, waiting, unblessed, without a word of communication to them. Aye, but it's different now. As the Lord Jesus led them out. I love that. I love that expression. He led them out. Just as he's leading us out. And he's expecting us to be there when he comes for us. That's why he leads us out. And there he was, with his hands in blessing, uplifted. Oh, he had the reality of this in his heart. My beloved, we've to be as holy out there, and I'll deal with that just a little later, out there as we are in here. Oh, we were all this morning, weren't we? You sense the atmosphere of the gathering. And we wanted to match that atmosphere in our own spirits. But what about tomorrow? What about tomorrow? We have to be as holy out there as in here. In this passage, there are three spheres that seem to be announced to me. I want you to look at them again. It says, in that day there shall be, and the bells, and the bridles, and the harness of the horses, holiness unto the Lord. And then he says, and the pots of the Lord's house shall be like the bowls upon the altar. Yea, every pot in Jerusalem and in Judah shall be holiness unto the Lord of hosts. Now, let's catch what the prophet is teaching you. Three things, very simply and very briefly, I'm going to highlight them. And the first is this. What do the horses suggest? Well, maybe somebody once said to me, I had a great imagination. After I had thought I'd expanded, you know, some of the types of the tabernacle. So you have a great imagination. I trust this is not imagination. I trust it's of the Spirit of God. Because what I'm going to say is this, that those, wherever you get horses in the Bible, as far as I can assume, it has to do with commerce. It has to do with business. And here it is. Holiness unto the Lord. Where? In the realm of commerce and business. Now, what does it say this? Apart from politics, I think that's the filthiest part of, and the most corrupt part of our nation. There is more intrigue. There is more corruption in that sphere than in any other sphere. And the thing is this, my beloved younger brethren and some older, you have to work in that sphere. That's where you have to work. Where there are folks who are so dangerous to the holiness of the believer, mingling with them and their corrupt practices. While our motto has to be written large, holiness unto the Lord. This is absolutely imperative. This is the acid test of our faith. You know, the greatest thrill I ever got, I'm speaking about my father again. I shouldn't do that, but I know I'll get into trouble. But you know what a man told me? And I loved it. He said, "Your father is the most righteous man in the village." That's what he told me. He wasn't a Christian. But he worked with him. And at the end of the day, what a testimony. For somebody just to say that about you or me. Totally reliable in honesty and in integrity. That's where they fail. They never got to grips with the truth of the reality of holiness unto the Lord. And so often their lives were stained. I've got to say, too often amongst the believers, that is so true. Now, I don't believe that all businessmen are corrupt. There are some of the best of God's people in business, and I know it. But what danger we are in the sphere of commerce. Put it up in your office, your place of work, holiness unto the Lord. I had a compliment. I'll get around for this. I'll get real trouble for this. But I had a compliment paid to me down the mine. We were coupling up with another mine. And the manager was escorting these other men in to see where we worked and how we worked. And he said, "I just want to say that there must be no swearing beyond that point. Because he's a Christian." He's in there. It's so vital that it is evident that we live by that motto in the field of commerce, holiness unto the Lord. But that's not the only place. He speaks, secondly, about the pots in the Lord's house being like the bowls before the altar. The Lord's house, that's the assembly, isn't it? We heard about that yesterday. That's the assembly. So that if the one is the world and its commerce and its business, the other is in the assembly. And over our assembly, a good place to put this holiness unto the Lord. I shudder to think of Nadab and Abihu. Do you remember them? As they came into minister in the house of the Lord. And God dealt with them. Some mercy doesn't deal with us like that. And I'll tell you, there would be folks who would be taken away. And of course it was then that strong drink could never be the portion of the priest. I heard two elders say, "We could not say we were teetotal." I was amazed. Absolutely astounded. Where is our motto in the assembly? What constitutes the atmosphere of the assembly? What marks every believer in the assembly? Holy unto the Lord. But that's not all. And I love to think, it doesn't matter what sphere we take. You know, it's nothing to be up here. A parrot could be up here if it could speak. Don't think that we're on a pedestal. No pedestal whatsoever. It's as important that the person who gives out the hymn books at that door is as holy as the person that's up here. And he might be a sight holier if the truth were known than some who stand on this platform. So it is that whether our place in the assembly is prominent or whether it's behind the scenes we work, as so many so lovingly do, it's all with this in our heart, holiness. And the law. The third sphere here, yea, every pot in Jerusalem and Judah shall be holiness unto the Lord. Well, that's the domestic sphere, isn't it? So that the sphere of the world and its business that we have to operate in, there's a sphere of the assembly. Ah, but listen, it's as important that in our home that evidence is seen, holy unto. You didn't think that when you were washing the dishes, did you? Or making the lunch, some of us had too much. Holiness unto the Lord is what characterizes our kitchens. And I hope our sitting rooms, our lounges. And there are things that we can look at. I tell you, they'll destroy any thought of holiness unto the Lord. It's so vital that in the sphere of our home, this is before us, holiness unto the Lord. So that in these spheres, just as I conclude, I want to think for a moment of God's appeal to us in this respect. I'm thinking now of Peter's first epistle and of chapter 1 and these verses, 14 I think it is, 12 to 14. And here's God's appeal to us. Here's the standard, here's the measure of our holiness. As he that hath called is holy, so be ye holy in all manner of life. Holiness must be the hallmark of our living. Murray McChain said a beautiful thing on one occasion. He said, Lord, make me as holy as a pardoned sinner can be. Wouldn't that be a good prayer for us to go home and pray today? Make me as holy as a pardoned sinner can be made. Whom God cleanses, and he does, he will fill with the Spirit every clean vessel. Filled with the Spirit. We don't need to go into some special business that the Spirit will descend and take control of us again. That's rubbish. Utter garbage. What we need is to be clean and empty vessels. And the Spirit will automatically fill us. Whom he claims, he cleanses. Whom he cleanses, he fills with his Spirit. And whom he fills with his Spirit, let me say, is the secret he'll use for his glory. That's what it is. every one whom he finds, the soul. May the Lord help us today just to come into his presence and in reality just to say, I'm going to be. Well, it's a great thing when you're tempted, young people. When sin beckons, the devil causes his intrigue. Just to have this in your heart, I'm holy, son to Lord.